Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Tech and E-commerce podcast. I'm your host, Rushit Shah, and I'm also Regional Director at Elcott Global, responsible for executive search and consulting business in Asia Pacific. Our mission is to connect the tech in supply chain and e-commerce ecosystem globally by bringing forward some of the interesting stories about success and failures from leaders in industry.
I'm very excited about today's podcast as we have Johnny Slattery from SCNX. Johnny is currently the CEO at SCNX, which is a digital solution for ship owners and ship managers to give more transparency and control around inventory management and consumption patterns. I've been fortunate to know Johnny for quite some time now. He's a product innovator. He has been building softwares for the last 25 years in several industries. In his 90s, he was a software engineer and then moved into product designing. And then he even started his own business. So, you know, he's an entrepreneur as well. And then he ended up at SCNX, and we'll hear more about his story there.
Hey, Johnny, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Rushit. Nice to be here, man.
Before this started, I told you I'm quite impressed with your background. Do you mind kind of giving us a rundown on how did you end up becoming the CEO at Spares CNX?
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot. I will try and compress the last 25 years into a relatively short story. So I started programming Java at 17 and 18 in Dublin in Ireland. And back then, in the late 90s, you could charge, you know, several hundred pounds a day for your contract programming services. So I went ahead and did that straight after school. And then I completed a degree in business and technology at Trinity College for 5 years at night while working through my programming career. So I popped out at like 24 with a good degree from Trinity, also 5 years coding experience. I was then working at KPMG in a company called Bearing Point, which is a tech and consulting spinoff. And then from there, I kind of progressed my coding career into more of business requirements gathering. We used to have these requirements analysts, which basically is a product role 25 years ago. So I was doing requirements analysis, and then I moved to London to work in the investment banks. So I was working at BNP Paribas for fixed income technology there in London. So essentially, I kind of had 7 or 8 years of programming and product definition experience. Mm-hmm. And then I got offered an opportunity to come to Singapore and run the recruitment company Connected Group. So I switched and briefly had a short stint in recruitment for a year or two. And it was very interesting. And we turned the business into a kind of a profit-making business. But then I quickly realized that recruitment probably wasn't for me. And I was looking around wondering, well, why didn't I like recruitment for openers? Well, I guess I felt like I kind of had to answer to my client, had to answer to my customer, had to answer to my boss, had to answer to everybody. So I was looking around at careers that made more autonomous decisions. And I had a few friends who were trading oil at the time. So I worked for a year or two interviewing in banks and hedge funds and took a job in Mandara Capital, which was a commodities trading house in London. And essentially started again another career there at 30 in London. So the way I got into Mandara was I sold myself as a kind of a techie who understood a little bit about trading. And I worked for a fantastic trading boss called Alf Salty, who's quite prolific, actually. He really kind of changed the way the industry traded. But essentially, I was building tech products and then trading those products, trading using those solutions, rather, within his fund. Now, I did that for 2 years, and Alf was a real taskmaster. So after 2 years, I left and I actually set up my own fund to compete with his, called Sunnis Commodities, with a gentleman who is an ex-Goldman's trader. So we ran that for kind of about 4 years, opened up an office in Singapore. And then essentially 4 or 5 years later, I sold my piece of the business back to my business partner and moved back into kind of tech proper, where I took a job as the chief product officer for Yoji, which is a listed logistics tech business. So that took me back to product team development. And I learned an awful lot at Yoji, not only about supply chain and what were the trends in 2017 and 18, but also about how to build good product teams. And also I realized I loved building product teams and I loved building tech products. So I continued there for about 2 years and then moved across to Spares CNX, where I am now as the head of product again. And on arrival in Spares CNX, there was a kind of a bit more of a CapEx intensive solution that had been put forward by the original incubating team, which was Boston Consulting Group and MISC. And I made a few changes there, and that solution was seen as a success. And a year later, the CEO position opened up and the board asked me to step in as an interim. And that was 2 years ago, and I'm still there.
That's awesome. And that's so the last two jobs has been more supply chain and logistics focused.
So the last kind of five, six years has been very much around supply chain products and what's required there. And as you know, there's quite a lot of kind of adoption gap to close.
You're in supply chain in very exciting times. I mean, there are a lot of challenges, but these challenges are giving a lot of birth to new solutions. And I'm quite sure you're basically kind of giving solutions to one of them. So let's talk a little bit about Spare CNX, just kind of, you know, what is the portfolio and services the company provides. And then we'll talk more detail on the challenges of the industries and, you know, a little bit about going on IoT hardware versus data management tools.
Yeah, no, interesting topic. So essentially Spare CNX was set up to address the problem of inventory management offshore on vessels. Yeah. So in the shipping world, each vessel is its own individual business. It has variants, jurisdictional variants, company variants, cargo variants, crew variants. Everything is variant. So what you ends up happening is you have different situations on board every vessel. Now, of course, there are common ground between all these problems, but they seem very individual at the time. Yep. And the incumbent technology for inventory management within shipping, it's quite legacy. It's quite, you know, a big database with a front end that sits on a computer, and the onus is on the user, who's the mechanical engineer, to update all of the data. So now if all of the data is being updated correctly, then of course there's no problem. But the reality is it's a very hot, difficult environment in cramped spaces. And after 10 hours of changing nuts and bolts in the engine room, the last thing that the guy wants to do is go upstairs and start pressing the plus on Excel and finding from a dropdown of 5,000 which parts he used. So it's kind of become culturally accepted that people don't really track what they consume. So right. Therefore, everything is being monitored on what you purchased, which is one good way to approach it. But really, you need to get to consumption patterns to be able to get the most value out of the system.
That's awesome. And are you focusing only on shipping lines right now?
No, we're not actually. So I can come to that in a second, but just to follow on from what I was saying. So essentially what we did was we said, okay, well, how do we make a solution which is the path of least resistance for the user so that it's so helpful and easy for him or her to use that they just naturally use it? And then, of course, all of the analytics around consumption and purchasing are downstream of the usage of the system. So we essentially built a mobile scanning tablet which operates on RFID and runs on Android 10. And it is able to be a one-stop shop for inventory management on board the vessel. So all of the manuals, the schematics of the engines are digitized onto the tablet. The tablet can be used as a kind of a radar, like a scanner that will bring you to the part in the room. We can also do digital stock reconciliation through crew change or vessel sale. And that is the time savings are enormous around the stock reconciliation piece. But essentially, we looked at all of the different time and cost savings that we could squeeze out of this new solution. And that's been our main focus for the last kind of 3 or 4 years.
Interesting. And for you, let's say the product within the containers, I'm assuming it's basically an IoT devices which are connected.
Yeah, so we essentially have a virtual machine server that we can install on the servers that are currently on board. Then we build a small Wi-Fi in the spares room, and then the tablet connects to that Wi-Fi. Now, of course, we had to build it with a lack of connectivity in mind. So very often the vessel goes totally offline and that's not a problem. It's all stored locally. And also you can take the tablet out of the spares room and take it around the vessel. And also it will reconnect when it comes back into connection and it will match with the database then.
Interesting. You know, on the IoT side, is the product made by Spare CNX as well? Or is it, you know, any IoT device you basically with throwing RFIDs can be used?
Yeah. So actually we wouldn't have been able to build our business 7 years ago because the technology didn't exist. Mm-hmm. It's very much that in the last 3 or 4 years, you've seen these integrated RFID scanning tablets that have emerged. And there's really only one or two globally that work at the moment, but we know that many providers are preparing more options. So actually currently our tablet is sourced from a third party. And then we have written very bespoke code, not only for, it runs on Android. So we've written it on Android, but also we've kind of made some machine code alterations that speak directly to the RFID scanner on this particular tablet. But we also are aware that you know, shipping companies are being bombarded by new solutions today, and they don't want to have a separate tablet for each solution. So in the roadmap over the next year is also to build a hardware agnostic solution where we can ship just an RFID clip-on, and then it can go on any Android tablet.
I mean, that's, you know, my question is actually quite aligned to this one, because I feel that many companies who came with IoT devices now have moved to data management companies where they're kind of creating data, showing data, visualizing it. And it's because, you know, the Southeast Asian market kind of became quite mature when it comes to IoT device. They reduce the cost. Mm-hmm. And I think relatively they are coming up with standardized devices. So, you know, they're talking to each other's devices. But with Spare CNX, do you think you have moved completely to a data management company now?
Well, I was thinking about this earlier. So it's really two sides of the same coin. So I don't see it IoT versus data management. I think the two have to happen in parallel. Mm-hmm. Now, IoT is essentially a mechanism for channeling data points into a database. Yeah. So really, the data management piece is the key. And where I believe shipping companies and everybody needs to work is on the planning of the data. So understanding what data is important to track and being able to move the needle with that data will move the needle for your business. That's the number one place to start. So I think there has to be a lot of data planning and kind of data evaluation of what's important within the business. Then when you know what to track, you can deploy IoT devices to the tracking. So for example, in inventory management, it's very important to know what you're using and why. So what did you consume and which work orders prompted the consumption of that part? That's a key metric for understanding how you optimize your inventory profile. So essentially in that scenario, you know, we would work with the customer to understand their own data structure. And of course, we provide services in that space. But then also we have a full solution ecosystem, which assists in the company getting that data seamlessly provided for each part that's consumed. A couple more points on the IoT versus data management. You know, I think because of COVID in the last 2 or 3 years, you know, things have changed quite radically everywhere, but also in shipping. We now have obviously a glut of performance in container and also in LNG for different reasons. But, you know, these now very wealthy segments of the market have the funding to really go and explore new solutions, new ways of doing things. And as certain large shipping companies in that space have the funding and have proven efficacy from these projects, I think we're going to see them leading the way. And then a lot of the shipping industry saying, oh, okay, that worked for their fleet of 400 vessels. We should try that also. So I think you're going to see a lot of new technologies actually being adopted here over the next year or two. So I think it's a very exciting time.
I was basically with this discussion about with a couple of companies, electronic manufacturers, talking about IoT. And we had almost had a debate where, you know, half of them said that IoT is just kind of start of what it can do. And other half had this idea that, you know, I mean, right now, IoT device is basically at max what has come out. So unless there's new connectivity, new way of connecting with those IoT devices, there's not much going to change. But the major change or major tech which is coming is all visualization, capturing data, and then kind of, you know, data scientists doing their magic and coming out with new ways of looking at numbers. So kind of keeping that in mind, and I know you're pro IoT device and you think that's going to change, but let's say moving more to 5 years instead of 2 years, where do you see the landscape for IoT and data to, you know, within supply chain?
I think, as I said, I think all these things are correlated. I don't believe that any particular area is going to massively advance across beyond the others. So if you look at it from those three components you just mentioned, visualization is definitely moving forward. There's a lot of SaaS products that help you see how you're managing your business. As that moves forward, people then say, oh, it'd be very interesting if we had this data series that we could plug in, then we could make these decisions. Where do we get this data series? Moves down the chain. Oh, okay. Hey, there's this new IoT device that can help us track containers or that can help us analyze faults in a certain system that can tell us if there's a pressure or a heat problem in that system. Or, you know, there's so many different IoT applications. So I really think as visualization moves on, then it's going to take IoT with it. As IoT moves on, I think also, for example, with us, we're a bit IoT led at the moment because we're bringing something that's a bit whiz bang to the industry. You know, oh, they just built the iPhone 15 for onboard engineers. Yeah. So then people are saying back on shore, well, how can we use that data to now optimize the wastage in inventory management? But again, I think, you know, another major trend that is happening and also needs to happen is centralization. You know, a lot of vessels operate as independent entities that are floating mainframes. And that is very much the solution for the 80s and the 90s and maybe the noughties. But I think these days, it's important that shipping companies centralize and look at things on a fleet-wide basis to make fleet-wide decisions to optimize the various parts of their business. And I think that that is happening today. And that's a very exciting prospect. Obviously, it's going to provide margins to the first adopters who get it right. But also it's going to, as I said, bring in a lot more decision support systems that leverage new technology.
I think the head of innovation roles, which comes to all the shipping lines, the only challenge I feel for them is that, you know, their initial criteria is to look for innovation, which kind of reduces their carbon footprint and not really to something which is making their process more efficient. I don't know if that, you know, the way they see that wastage or the time investing on getting things right and right time is, I don't know how do they calculate it, but just that KPI initially is quite different. So I always feel that there's a mismatch between where the tech should go on the shipping lines and what shipping line is really looking for right now, because, you know, most CEOs has basically said, oh, they want to go net zero by 2050 or 2040, right? So that's one of the mismatch. Now with your clients, do you mind providing some success stories?
Sure. So we're currently with three different customers, and we are transforming, I think, our 50th vessel in the last week or two. So we have quite a lot of real data coming back to us from installs, but we're also out there running pilots with other customers that are, you know, they want to try it before they buy it kind of approach. So we just finished a pilot on two VLCCs, and it was really, really quite fascinating what came back. So we had an accuracy alignment. So initially we go on board and we bag and tag everything. We basically make a digital inventorization of the physical hardware. And then you have 100% alignment between the image of the hardware and the real hardware on board. Our system then maintains that accuracy over the years because we track consumption and we track purchasing. So on this VLCC, the initial transformation showed a $2 million alignment of accuracy between the two vessels. And the total net inventory is probably about 4.5-5 million. So you're looking at kind of 40 to 45% alignment. So before that, you either thought you had it on board and you didn't, which meant that you had to purchase it, but probably urgently at the end because you thought you had it, or you didn't think you had it on board, but you actually did, in which case you actually purchased it and then you had an excess inventory on board. So there's an awful lot of wasted purchasing happening in shipping. And essentially, if you know exactly what you have and you know exactly how often you're using it, then you can really bring that excess inventory down by 30-40%. So that was the first huge benefit we saw. We also saw through stock reconciliation, they do that twice a year and it usually takes two guys, one man month. So that's kind of four FTE months a year. And essentially with our system, it's done in a day. So that's obviously a massive time saving for those vessels also. So one very important feature that we provide is that we can show vessels what a minimum ROB needs to be per SKU. So how many of these auxiliary pumps do you need to get by for a year? How many of these O-rings do you need to get by for a year? And at the moment, nobody's been able to ever make a call on that. So you have different personalities. Some superintendents and chief engineers are very careful and they hold a lot of inventory. Some are much more Spartan in the kind of inventory profile they hold. But now we can look at the data and say, okay, you're burning through 7 of these a year. You have 15 on this vessel. You do not need to buy any more until you get down to 7. And really what we do is we work with the purchasing teams and also the superintendents who own the P&L for the vessel to show them that they have this excess purchasing on board. So we're seeing anywhere from $100,000 to $500,000 worth of inventory that for one time only does not need to be repurchased. So that's like a kind of a big one-time payback for installing our solution. And then, of course, we can maintain the accuracy and help them with purchasing decisions through our shore portal and, you know, telling them, oh, you cross these 15 different vessels, you need to make a purchase of 30 of these items. And then, of course, from there, you can start to make smarter purchasing decisions.
Can I just go a little bit more detail on basically more on client onboarding? So for example, let's say you have a client who wants to go do a pilot. How long does it really take for you to completely get on board, tag all the information, giving them the first output? What's this lead time from you acquiring a client and giving them data?
That's a great question. So there's a couple of different inputs into that calculation. So first of all, we need them to send us the data from the vessel. And obviously we need to sign NDAs and whatnot, but the data from the vessel will tell us, are there many duplicates? Because sometimes, you know, purchasing teams, instead of finding the right bucket to add one to, they just make a new bucket. It's very common. So we usually have to do some sort of data cleaning exercise, but that can be done in a few days. And then we work with the team probably for 2 to 3 weeks to prepare the vessel and to send the hardware on board. And then we go on board with our vessel engineers. They install the hardware in a day or two. They give the training to the teams and they make the top four of the crew on board the vessel very comfortable with what we're planning to do. In the background, of course, we've set some KPIs as to what we want to achieve in terms of displaying value through the pilot, because that value is what's going to enable the business case for a full fleet purchase. Then we can bag and tag all of the items. If there's maybe, if it's a smaller bulker and it's got 5,000 items, we can do it in 2 weeks. If it's a very large LNG vessel with 20,000 items, it might take us 6 weeks. And then finally, we have the variable of how much help the onboard engineers in that company can give us. And obviously, the more help they give us, the better. So it's probably at its tightest, maybe 6 to 7 weeks from when we actually decide to do a pilot, that we can provide them with a post-pilot report showing all the value with a fully kind of bagged and tagged and transformed vessel.
And I'm assuming once you've done the pilot run, it's far more efficient and smoother to do the second round and third rounds of the...
Yeah, well, it is. I mean, it is in terms of understanding the data, yeah. Understanding the way that a shipping company works with work orders, for example, how they process work orders and consumption. But there is still an exercise of picking items up, identifying what they are, sticking a tag on them and marking them to the system. So that's the kind of heavy lifting that has to be done on every transformation. There's sometimes this misconception that once we've done one vessel in a sister class, we can kind of copy and paste the database. But unfortunately, I wish it was that easy. We still have to go through the heavy lifting.
There's no way to artificially learn from the weight or the size and the frequency of what the product has been sent from one destination to another, from one buyer. Yeah.
We have a transformation app, which is going to be released in, I think, Q3. And essentially that will look at which parts were identified on the previous sister class vessel and will make recommendations when you're actually bagging and tagging to help speed that process up. So we're trying to apply AI and kind of, you know, machine learning shortcuts to all the different areas that we're deploying technology in.
Interesting. And is your clients only in Singapore, or do you have team which is
No, we're totally global. We're doing a very long set of pilots with a large container company in Europe, and we have going on board vessels in Brazil, America, Europe, Middle East. I mean, we were going on in China, but that's now completely closed down for onboardings, which is making things quite tricky actually with one particular customer. But essentially, you know, we're operating globally. I think you asked me earlier about adjacent industries as well. We're also deep in some research on mining and a kind of a shore-based system, because essentially wherever you have heavy machinery industry, you have expensive parts. And wherever you have a heavy machinery industry, you probably have a mechanical engineer who's the end user, who's working very hard on the mechanics, doesn't really have time for a laborious digital process at the end of his shift. And then the final tick for us to let us know that it's in a vertical we should be looking at is if there's a challenging environment. So we developed this for offshore, low connectivity, tight spaces, you know, difficult environment. That also applies to mining. That also applies to construction, that applies to railroads in the US, that applies to offshore wind farms. So there's a lot of other areas where the trifecta of requirements comes through, and really our solution is, from the initial discussions we're having, is a very welcome tool. So we're very excited about what's to come next year.
Awesome. So for you to kind of grow, it's more about talent. Is that the challenge you're facing right now? Lack of talent?
Actually, to be honest, we're very fortunate. We have a wonderful culture at Spares CNX, and I think everyone would agree with me. We do very well in our employee engagement surveys. And I think the key to our success here has been to try and hire people with a good accountability model. So the people who kind of take ownership for their own work and deliver are the kind of people that have done well during COVID when working from home, right? Because, you know, you don't have to be in the office. It's not a kind of a FaceTime culture. It's about delivering. So we've given people a lot of freedom and they have all responded in kind. We have a really fantastic bunch of very scientifically minded people within Spare CNX, and they're scientifically minded from operation engineers who go on board to commercial salespeople. Everyone has a bit of an engineering bent with them. So what we're really looking for when interviewing is signs of good ownership of delivery of tasks, and also of kind of a little bit challenging the status quo. You know, okay, things weren't done like that before, fine, but should they be done like that in the future?
And for you, what do you think is the hard to find skills right now in your industry, and how are you trying to develop them within Spare CNX?
Well, I think, you know, globally, we have a shortage of engineers, and especially engineers with tenure. And I mean, software engineers here. It's hard to find good people in every department, but definitely there's a real shortage of good engineering talent. And essentially, you know, we have one operations engineer who's moving across into DevOps, Shakir, and he's shown great aptitude there. We have people moving between departments, and we encourage that because, you know, they may be relatively new to their new department, but the weight of understanding that they bring from design or operations or commercial means that they can actually bring a new life into the engineering department when they arrive there. So we're very keen on training people into the software engineering department from other parts of the business. And we are also looking at other strategies for trying to source good tech talent. But yeah, we've got a really wonderful engineering team at Spare CNX. And I think that's one of the reasons that we've been able to build such a good product.
Awesome. Johnny, going back to your kind of personal professional front, what were the soft skills which kind of enabled you to find a job within the supply chain industry or supply chain tech industry?
And that's a great question, Rushit. I think I've always been very determined. So I've made some career moves which people never understood in my life, but it's always because I've had a real yearning to understand how people do things that I haven't fully grasped yet. So because of that, I've kind of jumped around between always being around technology, but software engineering, a lot of product work, then oil trading and derivatives trading, moving into recruitment briefly at one point, back to product. And I think general management is the right place for me because I understand at kind of a base level most of the departments that are working with me. So, but I think really the most important soft skill to have, a will to succeed, and just a kind of a never say die attitude.
And what culture, you know, Spare CNX is kind of working on, and what culture as a leader, what culture do you promote?
I think you have to be very supportive of people experimenting. And the only way that people will experiment is if they feel safe for something to quote unquote fail. But really what we're trying to do is we're trying to look at new ways of doing old things. So if you're going to find the best way, you have to try 10 or 20 different strategies before you find the best, right? So I think as a company and all of my leaders and department heads down through the business, we all promote experimentation. So run as many low capex experiments as possible and scale what works. I think that's kind of the motto of the way that we do R&D. And then finally, experiment, but also you have to have a certain level of ownership for your delivery of tasks. And I think ownership and transparency around what you're doing are extremely important characteristics in happy employees and in happy culture, really, not just, you know, both ways.
You know, you've seen kind of multiple industry, and now you kind of have to go back and restart again, and knowing what you know now, what have you done differently? Would you still come and end up in supply chain? Would you continue being in kind of trading?
No, absolutely. No, it's very hard to question the road not traveled, but yeah. I'm incredibly happy actually that I ended up in supply chain. I think it's recession proof. Yeah. So people are always going to need to move goods because that's the kind of tightly coupled world that we live in. So there's an enormous amount of opportunity, and it's not without its challenge because things are a bit slower and bureaucratic, but I think we're in a very exciting wave of both investment and experimentation in supply chain. Yeah. And I'm just happy that I had enough experience from all these other industries to know that I'm lucky to be here in supply chain and not be thinking, oh gosh, I've been in supply chain for 20 years. I wonder, is there something better? It's a fantastic space to be in. Yeah.
And, you know, just last piece of advice for, you know, we have a lot of young graduates and interns who are just kind of started out their career. What would you suggest them, to go and work in a corporate world or to go and work in a tech company or a startup company? Let's remove tech company, but a startup company.
Yeah, I would say that there's good lessons to be learned in both. And, you know, it's very funny. 20 years ago when I was starting out, it was all about having 8 years on your CV. And, you know, I jumped every 2 years at the beginning of my career because I was very curious, right? I think these days that approach is seen more positively. So I would encourage young people to not just focus on one skill. With the power of internet tutorials and just engaging with your environment at work and at home, you can learn multiple skills concurrently. So I think it's very important for people to have more than one kind of, like be more than a one-trick pony, you know? If you're working in coding, also make sure that you understand which vertical space that you actually are passionate about. Maybe you're passionate about music or sports. There is software and disruption happening in every industry. So you have your core skill, but then you also have the vertical you apply it to. And within that vertical, there's probably more skills that you can master. So I would say have multiple strings to your bow.
Awesome. That's a great advice. Johnny, before we end, why don't you take this space to talk to our audience directly about Spare CNX?
Thanks, Rashid. Well, I think that we have done something very different at Spare CNX. And I think that a lot of the time in shipping, people look at software and products as just a cost. But I think there's an enormous amount of ROI available in inventory management space for shipping companies. So we see a very large one-off ROI, and then we see a maintained ROI over time. So at the moment, we're seeing it somewhere between 10 and 20 times the return on the cost of the solution. So I would just say to everybody who has a shipping company and isn't sure whether or not it's going to be a good investment, please come to us, contact me, contact my team, and we are very happy to make things as easy as possible for you to try out our solution and to really see the value coming back. We have lots of test cases now from our current customers and our pilots. So we've gotten much better at making it very digestible and very clear what kind of value we provide.
So Johnny, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time.
Awesome, Richard. Great to be here. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you today and wishing everyone a great day.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For all the show notes and information discussed in the episode, please follow Elcott Global/podcast. Also, if you found this interesting, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or any of the podcast platforms. We are looking forward to your feedback. Thank you so much.